kid's birthday party?
Miracle. Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. All right, Abracadamits, I hope everyone has had a good week. It's been a good grind getting stuff done. I hope you're getting it done, like, in the morning hours, because any other time than that, it is just too damn hot. It is still stupid hot here in Tennessee, y'all. So wherever you are listening from, I'm sure it's hot there too, but it's hot as hell here in Tennessee. Know that. Also, I've noticed if anybody is looking for a job, damn, you can literally find a job anywhere right now. And I mean, all these places got like these hiring bonuses. You know, I saw Crystals is paying you $500 hiring bonus just to get a job. Someone's paying you just to apply for the job. That's crazy, man. I'm thinking about like applying for the job, getting my $500, and then quitting that crap like my name was Simone Biles. Oh, just kidding, just kidding. To be honest with you, man, I really don't care. I mean, Simone, who knows? We don't know what she's going through. We don't know. She could have some issues going on. And hell, you know, it's about time we kind of pay attention to people whenever they're having some issues. So who knows? Who gives a damn, Simone? Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. Also, like she's ever going to listen to this podcast. So yeah, maybe I should do a gymnastics. Here we go. A gymnastics podcast episode. So any of you gymnastics people want to come on and we'll talk about gymnastics. Gymnastics. I don't even know if I can say it. Anyways, hey, I do want to give a big shout out to the shows from last weekend. Thank you so much, 1907 Brewery, for having me out. It was a sold out show. Amazing people in Morristown, Tennessee. Much love, Morristown. And then let me give a big shout out to the Comedy Zone in Bristol, Virginia. Thank you so many good people in Bristol. Thank you so much. You guys were fun as well. I do have a show coming up August 6th at the Historic Grove Theater right here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. You can get your tickets at brownpapertickets.com. That's going to be a good one. That's August 6th. And then I'm going to be in Greensboro, North Carolina, August 14th at the Idiot Box Comedy Club. And keep listening to some more episodes, and I'll give you some more information on that, mainly because I don't have the information in front of me. But anyways, let's get this rolling. Let's give a big shout-out for the sponsors of the Abracadam Podcast. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451 or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. This episode is also brought to you by Will's Towing. Located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, guys, no one likes to be broke down on the side of the road. It's awful. It sucks. But don't panic. If this does ever happen, give Will Roberts a call at 865-272-5300 and let Will Roberts take care of your towing needs. Will will come pick it up, and he will park that car anywhere you need him to park it. If you want that car set in your living room, Will will put it in your living room. Also, we've all seen those tow truck drivers that show up and they look kind of sketch, you know, like they may have been touching a possum before they came up to you. You know what I mean? One of those guys. You never have to worry about that at Will's Towing. Everybody who works at Will's Towing is clean, safe, and very friendly to deal with. So if your car breaks down, you need a towing service at all, give Will Roberts a call at Will's Towing. That's 865-272-5300. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest on the podcast is first of all, she's a very interesting person. And also, it's no secret that I enjoy the paranormal. I enjoy UFOs. Bigfoot can go kick rocks. Don't care for you, Bigfoot. Don't think you're real. But UFOs and ghosts, yes, you're real. So today's guest, I had to get on here. She's very unique in the way she does her investigations. Unlike some of the other paranormal groups, it's pretty much just her and her badass motorcycle. You can see her show on YouTube right now. It's Ghost Biker Explorations. It's got several seasons, and me and my wife have sat down and watched these, and they are really good. She gets some really good stuff. Great EVPs, really good stuff on these shows. So definitely check out her YouTube channel, Ghost Biker Explorations. But with that being said, if you will, abracadamets, please sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations. All right, I'm excited. We got Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations. How you doing, Miranda?
I'm doing great, Danny. Thank you for having me on.
Well, hey, thank you for coming on. And I tell you what, if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Absolutely. So my name is Miranda Young, but I'm better known as the Ghost Biker. I travel around the country on my motorcycle to different haunted and historic locations, and I highlight them on my web series, Ghost Biker Explorations.
That is super cool. First of all, that's totally different because, I mean, we've all seen like paranormal groups and people who, you know, it's real popular these days, but we don't see too many people on bikes going out solo and checking out these places. This is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, I know of a couple other investigators that ride, but I don't know of really any others that actually go out on their motorcycle to these specific locations. Typically in my episodes, it's either just myself videoing vlog style, or I may also have a videographer with me that may or may not ride, but I always have to pack, you know, accordingly for being on my bike. Sometimes if it's a bigger location, I'm able to have my videographer carry some stuff with them, but I've gotten pretty good at consolidating my equipment and really planning for the investigation if I'm out there on my motorcycle.
This is so, okay, so cool. Okay, but first, okay, I'm sure everybody's wondering this right off the bat, okay. How did you get into paranormal stuff? What got you into it? And also, keep in mind, you're solo pretty much. So, you know, you got to be super brave, I'm assuming. Go ahead. How did you get into it?
So like most investigators, I've been interested in it my entire life. I started out really being interested in the history and the storytelling aspect of it. My grandmother, she told me about growing up in the Appalachian Mountains and was telling me about all kinds of folklore and local haunts. And so she really instilled the importance of storytelling from the time that I was really young, both her and my dad. And also, you know, my dad, he would take me out traveling about every week to different locations, telling me kind of how the way things used to be. And so sort of essentially ghost of the past. And so so like most other people, I got into watching some of the paranormal entertainment shows. And a little over a decade ago, I was approached by a member of a team to look at some photography. My background is in photography, design, and marketing. And so he wanted me to look at some of these photographs and determine, you know, sort of if I could debunk some of the activity that they were having and maybe have a logical explanation for the photographs. So that's really how my journey started with actually investigating. I started looking at multiple images. They invited me on investigations. I became a member of their team and investigated with this particular team for about 8 years. And then I found that while I wasn't investigating with the team, I was going out on my own and investigating solo. I was doing a lot of urbexing and a lot of just exploring on my motorcycle. Or if I was traveling for work, I would always go out, find unique locations, take photos of them, and put them on my social media. And so with the team, we would usually investigate one or two places a month, a lot of commercial locations as well as residential cases. But the places that I was visiting on my own were typically places that people wouldn't really think about going, and they always had a unique story with them. So more of the local legends, if you will. And so people started asking on my social media posts questions about, were these locations haunted? What's the story behind them? And so I thought, you know, it's a pretty interesting concept, you know, because I'm always out on the motorcycle. Why don't I document this through video? And so I ended up stepping away from the team, because on the team, I had the job of being their photo analyst, as well as putting their videos together and doing their social media and marketing. And it was just a little too much to try to carry on the Ghost Biker and then also the team. So I ended up stepping away, and now we're rolling into the fourth season, and it took off like crazy. And so I've been doing a lot of cool and unique things with it, and I'm really glad I stepped away and to see where this would go.
That is so cool. And now, okay, so your parents kind of got your interest into the paranormal with Switch, which I think that's super cool to hear all kind of any type of old stories and stuff like that. Well, then let's also ask about this. Motorcycles.
Yes.
So what got you into motorcycles?
You know, same thing, always been interested in it. And funny enough, my family, none of them rides. And so, and they were actually kind of, you know, when we were younger, I grew up in Northeast Tennessee in an area that's very popular for ATVs and dirt bike riding, but they never really encouraged that. And I remember one of my first toys was a little bitty Sportster. And I loved that little Sportster. And so that's what I actually ended up getting when I got my first motorcycle. Well, not my first, but my first brand new motorcycle was a Sportster, an 883 iron. And so I just always loved it. And, you know, for me, there's no better way than being able to center and ground yourself on your way to these investigations than riding on a motorcycle. You can really get yourself grounded and really kind of plan out and think out that investigation that way.
Now, I don't ride. I don't. And I'll be honest, I don't know, man. Maybe I don't want to say motorcycles scare me. They don't scare me, but they scare me. No, I don't know. I don't know. Now, I've always seen like the guys with the big choppers, and I'm thinking that would be cool, you know, but I'm like 5 foot nothing. So I'd probably have to have like a ladder, you know, just to get on the thing. I don't know. But it still is cool. And so, well, let me ask you, how old were you when you first got your first bike? Were you like really, really young, or?
I wasn't. I was actually 29 when I got my first bike. Yeah. So I've been riding for 12 years.
So now I didn't ask you to tell you how old you were, Miranda. You told that, but I don't know. My abracadabra can do math. I don't know. But anyways, 29 years old, you get into motorcycles, which is super cool. And there's a lot of people who get into it even later in life. From what I hear, there is like a freedom, something that you get from being out there riding. And I can only imagine, I'd say you got a lot of time in your head too. A lot of time to just kind of think things and process things.
You really do. And, you know, for me, I often joke and say that I wish I had learned to ride earlier in life, because it's like, you know, when you're younger, you have no fear. And so, you know, that fear of falling, I mean, it's just natural. And on a motorcycle, it's not, you know, if you're going to lay it down, it's when, because most people do drop their bike at some point in time. But I know that, you know, sometimes when you're on those curves and on those roads, it's like, it's easy to get in your own head and think, you know, if I'm not careful, you know, I really could die at this. And so, not to take it in a morbid turn or anything, but I know that in my mind, I sometimes wish I had learned to ride earlier, because then that fear wouldn't be there. But on the flip side, I think that fear also helps to, you know, make me a better rider in a sense, to where I do know that you have to be careful. And it really does kind of parallel nicely with the paranormal and what we do. You know, I really plan my routes out, just like I really plan my investigations. And you really do have to think about what you're doing. There is sort of a method to the madness when I'm investigating. So the two really kind of parallel well together. when it comes to investigating and motorcycle riding.
You know, I totally agree with you. And that is so, you know, you respect that motorcycle. You respect being out there versus, like, we've all seen young idiots, even old idiots. We've seen, you know, and this, like, you moron, what are you doing?
Yes.
So, that's very well true. Now, okay. So, because, well, right off the bat, you're a brave person. Like I said, you go on these, this is kind of your thing. I do believe in there's something. There's absolutely something going on out there. I don't know what it is, but did you ever have like a paranormal experience? Did you ever have anything first before you really started investigating that really kind of sold it to you?
You know, I never really had that aha experience that a lot of investigators have. I know I've talked to a bunch of them that grew up in haunted houses. And so I never had one experience per se that happened. But, you know, when I was a kid, you know, with that storytelling aspect, I credit a lot of that to my librarian as well. I did go to a haunted elementary school. And, you know, the librarian made sure every year that she told everyone that passed through those halls from when she started till way after, you know, I was out of elementary school about the tragedy that occurred in our elementary school. And in the 1920s, they used to show movies in the elementary school, and it was on the second floor. And they were, on this particular night, they were showing a comedy. And there was a doctor in there who, when he would watch a movie, he would always have this loud, boisterous laugh. And so he was laughing at this comedy movie, and the deputy had told him multiple times to be quiet. And I guess the deputy must have been in a bad mood or something, because the doctor, he wouldn't keep quiet. And so the deputy actually ended up shooting the doctor. And when he shot him, he also ended up shooting the sheriff. And so so that was the story we were always told. And, you know, we've been able to go back, find newspaper articles, and you could actually see some of the bullet holes up in that second floor area of the elementary school. And so I can remember times when we were kids, you know, my parents were teachers, and we would be there a little bit later sometimes with the kids daring you to, you know, walk up to that area and see if you could hear the phantom laughter or hear the phantom shot, you know, or whatever. And so the school is no longer there, or the elementary school where the shooting occurred, but they do say that you can still hear some laughter, after some gunshots, even almost what sounds like an old 1920s comedy movie playing. So I never had an experience until I actually went ghost hunting on that very first investigation.
So,
and that,
okay. All right. So that's it. First of all, that's a crazy story. What kind of crap was going on? So the deputy shot the doctor and the sheriff.
Yeah.
And every now and then you can hear the doctor laugh, maybe an oh shit from the sheriff. That is insane. Man, that deputy was a jerk. I mean, gosh, how come they were watching a comedy? Everyone's having a good time.
Exactly. What's his problem? You know, he ended up, you know, how Southern justice can be. And it happened very swift. And he ended up getting put to death in the electric chair. And it was a very short trial. And that probably happened from the sheriff, you know, ended up passing, you know, in that. So, everyone knew that story. And so that was really cool.
And that was so you went to this place, and did you hear the laughing? Did you hear anything like that when you were there?
We always thought we did when we were young, you know, so we would always think that we did. And it would be one of those things where, again, you would dare your friends to go up on that second level. And they always kept those doors locked in that area because they weren't actively having elementary classes in there. But we would always think that we heard some kind of laughing or some kind of phantom shot, or someone would run up and smack the door, you know. And I would give anything to get back in there and do some investigations now, but they tore it down back, I think in the late 90s, they tore that specific building down.
You know, what I saw a ghost when I was 12 years old, which sounds like a crazy thing to say, and especially the way I say it so confidently. But I mean, over the years, I have tried to rationalize it and figure out, you know, any way I can. First of all, you know, I'm a magician, so I know how to, trust me. You know, I know how to pull the wool over your eyes. But I did look at it as rational and skeptical as I possibly could. And, you know, it kind of boils down to this. It came down to, it was either a ghost or something paranormal, something that I do not understand, something from another dimension, or I was hallucinating, which is also a possibility because, I mean, our brains do some weird stuff. Mm-hmm. But now here's the kicker. All right. I wasn't the only one that saw it.
Cool.
When I was 12 years old, my friend who was staying the night with me that night saw the same thing. We witnessed it together. And to this day, I don't know what, you know, I don't know. But and then I did have an experience happen just about 2 years ago. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. But I was grabbed.
Mm.
And I always used to, when I would watch these paranormal shows with Antoinette, you know, and mm-hmm. I would see these people like, I've got scratch marks down my back, or it popped my pimple right here. The ghost got me. You know what? I was kind of like, come on, man, come on. You know, I can't buy that. But I will say, I had, and to me, when I look back on this last experience that I happened, I was all alone. I was out walking mm-hmm. On a trail, and something grabbed me, and nothing was there. And I literally thought, you know, there was a biker or somebody, you know, a jogger, somebody, no one. So, and it was hard enough that, I mean, I was like tugged off the trail. So, and immediately it freaked me out so bad. I called Anthony. I was like, come get me. No, just come get me right now. Come get me. Anyways, as crazy as that sounds, I would almost have rather have seen something or heard something than for that to happen, because I can't even explain how creepy that was.
It truly is unnerving, especially being touched for the first time. I know that I was touched for the first time on my first investigation, and it kind of started as just a light, kind of a poking on the back of my leg, and it kind of made me feel like a muscle spasm. If you've been standing for so long and, you know, the muscle just kind of like that. And so that's kind of what I was thinking. And then I moved away. Same thing started happening again. And it was right below my right pocket on my pants. And when I wouldn't acknowledge and pay attention, it happened on three different times that it was poking me multiple times. And then it grabbed my pocket, and it was a distinct just pull, pull, pull. And so I knew at that point that it was something trying to get my attention. Once I acknowledged it, everything was fine at that point. And then I've been touched a couple times since. And if anyone has watched my past episodes, especially season 1 and 2, I had a videographer named Josh who was with me, and he's not a paranormal investigator. He is a believer, but not an investigator. And he was often getting touched and grabbed. And you know, the way that we sort of described it, because I've had this happen where they'll, you know, just touch my arm. It's almost kind of like, unless they give you a distinct just grab and shove, which they can have a lot.
What they
of
did
power.
To me.
Exactly. Because they can push, they can pull, they can scratch. A lot of the time, the touch, I kind of describe it as feeling like kind of going through a spider web. It's this weird, sticky, electric kind of feeling. I mean, you feel it there, but it's unlike anything I've ever experienced. And the only way I can describe it is kind of a spider web feeling.
Okay. I'll be completely honest. Even after I saw a ghost as a child, mm-hmm. when I heard people being grabbed or touched and stuff like that, I kind of thought it was BS. I thought,
yeah,
come on, man, there has to be this, yeah, ain't no one get touched by a ghost. But then when it happened, It's I can't even go into detail how unnerving, and it screwed me up. Yeah, because mm-hmm. I mean, imagine just like a somebody grabbing you by the waist and mm-hmm. yanking you off, like they were trying to yank you off the trail, you know, And it was, there was a force with it. It was enough to startle mm-hmm. me. Now, granted, I had my headphones in. I was in my own little world. I was going, all of a sudden, I was just like, whoa. Mm-hmm. And then I looked around. I was like, did somebody run into me? What's going on? And there was nobody there. So,
and that's such, that's a natural response too, because the brain is always trying to kind of figure out what it is. That's why sometimes pareidolia is so prevalent, is that, you know, that's why people will see faces in toast or faces in the wall or whatever. So the brain is always trying to figure out. And so that stunned response is actually a scientific response that a lot of people will experience when they either see a spirit or are touched by one. And then just the fact, you know, it's almost kind of like the enemy you can't see, you know, is the worst and the scariest, because if you're just going along and this entity actually has the power to be able to lift you off or shove you, I mean, and then there's nothing there. I can't even imagine just how, you know, how terrifying that would be.
It freaked me out. I mean, I can't even, you know, because I, that whole night I went home and I was trying to, I was like, okay, was this like a hypnotic jerk, you know, like the thing you, a lot of people do as you're falling asleep, your leg will just, mm-hmm. nothing like that. It wasn't, it was just, it's someone just had great, I can't explain it. I can't, you know, and that's probably the worst thing about it is like, I think people can relate seeing something, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? People mm-hmm. can relate hearing something, but it's hard to make somebody understand what it's like to get grabbed by something that's not there.
Yes. And those physical personal experiences are so challenging. And we always try to show them when, because that's a lot of what happens when you're in these locations, is a lot of the experiences that myself and my videographer are experiencing are, you know, these personal experiences. And that's really kind of hard to show, because, you know, if you're able to show the cold chills, you know, if the temperature is 80 degrees in the house, you know, I always try to account for temperature, who's in the area, for all the different variables around, so that if we do have some type of personal physical experience like that, we'll try to show the cold chills. We'll try to show the scratches or whatever in the real time, because that's how I try to film my episodes, is I try to put the audience into the moment. And one, it's a lot creepier that way, because I don't know what's happening and they don't know what's happening either. So it puts them in the moment, in the experience with me, rather than saying, this is the place I'm at, this is the evidence that I captured, let me just show you that.
I think that's a great idea. And I'll, you know, like, I'm not going to name any shows, but, you know, we've watched plenty of shows over the years, and they'll see, you'll see a chair moving across the room, but you don't see what's going on the bottom part of the screen.
Right.
And I can't accept that. I can't, right. Because I can think of so many ways that I could do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just like, okay, this is fun to watch, but come on. And to me right now, one of the least believable things is whenever you do see cabinet doors opening and moving, is because I can do that. I can do that right now, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's not mm-hmm. impressive to me. Now, I have seen some things that, you know, that especially with, we've got so many cameras and, you know, security type cameras, sometimes I pick up on some things and I'm just like, you know, that's really interesting. You mm-hmm. know, it's hard to say what that could be, what it is, but that is extremely interesting. Now, do you use the EVP, the electronic voice, what, I'm sorry.
Phenomenon.
But yes. Phenomenon, there you go.
Yes, I do. And actually for me, because my background is in photography and video and that sort of thing, the EVPs are one of the most compelling for me, because I've developed sort of an 11-point system that I'll run all photographs through just to try to debunk what I'm seeing. Plus, a lot of these locations, I try to go in during the day and do just a full-scale walkthrough, taking tons of pictures, not for not for really just to capture any kind of paranormal phenomenon, but to really try to sort of debunk myself, because when you're in the moment, you know, things look totally different. There may be mannequins in the room. There may be, you know, chains or something hanging down that when you're in the heat of the moment of an investigation, you may not notice or you may not remember. I mean, the human mind is not very reliable when it goes back for witnessing and that sort of thing. So for me, the EVPs are some of the most captivating, just because I always, you know, before each of my videos, I always try to put who's on the property. Is it just myself? Is it just myself and a videographer? If there's another male on the property, if it's just myself and another female, whatever, I always put that. I always put the temperature of the weather, what the moon phase is, that sort of thing. Just so if we're in an area and we're capturing, if it's just me and I'm capturing a male's voice, it's hard to explain that. So most of the EVP or most of the evidence that I've captured are EVPs that, you know, I don't have any type of explanation for. And I try to drop static cameras on the outside of the building and in also different locations of the building where I'm investigating, just to kind of show, because you will sometimes get outside noise contamination, but we try to, you know, try to account for that just by putting cameras and always putting audio recorders and such out if it's a large enough scale location.
Let me ask you this, because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't really, when you really think about ghosts, okay, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't really think about the reality if ghosts are truly real and do truly exist. Does that mean when we die, we're just, you know, floating consciousness, you know, floating around, stuck in this freaking, no, you know, shithole, you know, I don't want to be here, but I'm stuck here now, you know? I mean, how bad does that suck? That would suck.
Exactly. And that's a great question, you know, and I find that my opinion and my theories change every time I do an investigation. I'm a firm believer in energies, positive and negative energies. And sometimes I think, a lot of what we're experiencing isn't necessarily the soul of the being, but the energy that's left behind, especially if it's a residual haunting. And what I mean by residual is we have two types. We have the intelligent haunting and we have the residual. And the residual is something, say, for instance, you're in a doctor's office, or if you're doing a hospital, if you're doing a jail or whatever, it would be those sounds that continually happen every day. And they sound like they're continually stuck in a loop. Exactly.
What, when you say the intelligent, or the, I just think, well, I definitely wouldn't be an intelligent hon. I'd be in the corner. Look at this. I just over and over say something. Now this is the thing. I joke around a lot about the paranormal. I actually got a bit in my show that I talk about that actually happened on a paranormal investigation that I went with my wife, because, you know, internet, her thing is she likes to go to these haunted places. You know, it's a thing right now with people. Mm-hmm. And I go with her, and there's some funny stories we've actually gotten from there. And I poke fun, but to be honest, I do believe. Really, I do believe. But I was just, have you ever seen the movie Ghost Story with Casey Affleck? Have you seen that movie?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Okay. Now, most people... you've got some people that would watch that movie and be like, that was horrible. That was the most boringest thing I ever saw. But let's think about it for a minute. If you die and you become a ghost, that's kind of like what it might be like.
You're right. You're right about that.
Because I'm waving at, remember the part where he's waving at the window, or he's looking at the other ghosts in the other house and they're just looking at each other. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh God, I'm having flashbacks of, like, you know, snow days or something. As a child, not looking at the kids. I don't know, man. I saw that, but the movie, I enjoyed it because I was like, this is kind of depressing. It's mm-hmm. kind of also, it kind of makes you look at, you know, life after death in another way, you know. Here's another question I have to ask you this, Miranda, because mm-hmm. I wonder about every paranormal investigator who does EVP work. And I personally, I'm not a very religious person. I'm spiritually. I'm the spirit. What do I say? I'm spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, I've became that this past couple of years. I've had to consider myself spiritual because mm-hmm. I'm starting to believe in other things, you know. Mm-hmm. Have you ever asked any questions about like heaven or hell?
I have, and usually that's something that I will ask. I'll ask, you know, why they stay there. And, you know, it's interesting. We've been able to get, and I've also talked to several different investigators as well. We've gotten responses where people have come back and said, essentially, they can't tell us, or there's rules. I know there were two different occasions where I got a response that said there are rules. And so, you know, I don't know if they just don't want to tell.
So God's like, shh, whoa, you know.
And it's funny. I've heard several other investigators say that they've got that as well. And then we've gotten some that have said they're stuck there. And I don't know if it means they're literally stuck and can't. I'm not really a believer in the fact that they can't move on. I don't believe that. I don't think that they have that much will to necessarily stay in some of these locations. And that's just me personally. I think that the feeling of being stuck may be more of a residual type to their type situation as to why they're there, or that type of energy. You know, and then I'll also kind of go back and forth and think that maybe heaven and hell isn't quite as far away as we think it is. You know, people, you know, they think heaven's up here, hell's down here, and it's far away. You know, the veil may be quite thin, and it may actually be all around us. And some of these spirits may have the ability to be able to talk through. I know some of the different EVPs that I've captured, if you listen really carefully on some of them, and I'm talking about just the straight EVPs that we capture out of the air, nothing that's being aided by ITC or any type of spirit box, but it's almost like you'll hear a little pop before it comes through. And they sound like they're here, but also far away. And so, so it's kind of interesting when you really start and try to dissect some of these EVPs, it makes me think that maybe the veil is a little thinner than we think. And maybe it's more so all around us rather than further away than what we might imagine.
Now, what's one of the most craziest EVPs you've ever gotten?
Oh gosh, I've gotten quite a few. Probably one of the craziest. I spent the night, I've actually investigated Brushy Mountain State Prison on six different occasions.
Gosh, I've been there and it's so.
Yes. Yes. Great location. I investigated it. Out of the six times I investigated, five of those times was before it actually opened as the tourist attraction that it is now. And so I believe it was the third time I investigated there. They weren't open. They hadn't even built the restaurant or the distillery at that time. And so there was two ladies that run the paranormal tours there. They were actually asleep in the office area. And I decided that I'd been investigating all night long, and I decided that I was going to sleep in one of the areas, and I decided to sleep in the solitary confinement area, which is also known as the hole. Now, and so, yes.
You were there by yourself.
I was on this particular occasion.
Easy. Christ. Yeah. Damn. I don't want to put me in the hole by myself. I could not do that. Jeez.
Well, you know. Well, it was part of an Easter weekend investigation. The second night there was going to be multiple teams there, but the first night it was just myself and the two ladies that were that run the tours there. And so they were asleep. I decided to sleep in the hole. And so I put a camera in the cell that I was sleeping in. And if you've been in the hole, you know how this is. I mean, you're literally in a hole. And there's the four cells there, and it is pitch black, even in the daytime. And so I had cameras making sure that there was nobody coming in and making sure that, you know, I was in there. And I ended up sleeping for about 3.5 hours that morning. And I got 3 minutes, 15 seconds of Class A intelligent and residual EVPs. And probably the craziest I've ever gotten it's the best footsteps. I mean, it literally sounds like somebody is walking down the hall because you can hear the echo through the rock walls there. And it sounds like it stops right in front of my cell. And thank God I didn't hear this. I was in a sound sleep. But this gravelly, creepy voice says, "Night, night." And
hell no, I just got cold chills, dude. No. Oh, and my God.
People can go back and they can watch that. I highlighted that in season 2, episode 1 of the Ghostbiker Exploration series. And there's more stuff even. I mean, you get conversation going on between the cells. Something that's, and it's kind of the same voice. It says, "Help me." And then you hear a second voice whisper, "Help me." And then you hear this garbly, muffled conversation. And then up above the hole is the laundry area. And of course, at this time, there was no power running through there, but you hear what sounds like a dryer door. Because you know, those doors have that unmistakable metal sound. You hear the sound of a door being closed and what sounds like the cycle running in it. And then for about 5 minutes, you hear what sounds like a rubber ball being just kind of bounced on the floor, bounced at the wall. And it's just this continual bounce sound. And I actually found out, I found this out about a month ago. I was on a podcast and I was telling about this. And one of the people on the show was a former prison guard. And he was like, "That actually makes a lot of sense, because during that time, they used to give them rubber balls because that was something that they couldn't turn into a shiv or a shank or anything. And they would use those." So it was actually time period accurate. It may be something else, but that's what it sounded like to me. And it was all just in this sequence. And those are probably the craziest EVPs that I've ever captured.
Okay. I got to ask, did you listen to it on the way home when you got home? You didn't listen to it before you left, right?
I didn't because I slept a little while and then I actually went home for a few hours and then went back to investigate that night. And that night with those 9 other teams that were there, because we were trying some experiments to see if the timing mattered. And so we wanted to be there during Easter weekend and see kind of if things changed based on some of the experiments we were doing. And we actually saw, between myself and 9 other people, we actually saw a shadow figure in the cafeteria area. I had never seen a shadow figure until then. We actually saw it. We were doing some flashlight experiments. And just before it showed itself on 3 different recorders, we catch this voice say, "Watch this." And we were able to triangulate where the voice was coming from based on where our recorders were sitting. And right after it says, "Watch this," you hear all of us go crazy. There were no cameras going at this time, of course. And I believe really that it wouldn't have showed itself had there been cameras. But you see the flashlight that's sitting on the column in the in the cafeteria, it lights up. And the way those columns are is they're about halfway up brick, and then they're smooth. And so it was casting its beam out. And in the beam on the ground, you see what kind of looks like a little tornado kind of spinning, almost like dust. And then you see a shadow being cast on the ground of a head and shoulders, and it strolls across the room, probably about 10 seconds. And in paranormal time, 10 seconds is a long time to see something. We all literally saw this walk. And we had just been doing a Native American experiment in there. And I believe that that probably played a part in it. But it was unlike anything I'd ever seen. And I've only ever heard one other person explain that little tornado whirling movement. And it was a lady up at the Lizzie Borden house. She was talking about a shadow figure that she had seen. Yeah. And we were up there investigating. I was doing a collaboration with Soul Sisters Paranormal and she described it. And so I pulled her aside and I said, "You know, I've never heard anyone else explain seeing this little tornado swirling on the ground. I'm not sure what that was, but sure we saw the same thing."
What do you think the shadow people are? What do you think the shadow guides are?
You know, I heard it explained one time. You know, there was, you know, a lot of people, whenever they go into hospice, they will see a lot of the people who are passing away. They'll see relatives and such that are there. And one of the ladies that I was talking to, her father was about to pass away, and she had actually seen a vision, and she saw these shadow figures in her dad's room. And she was kind of doing a speaking event on this, and she said that our minds and eyes are not able to actually really comprehend some of the things that we're seeing. And so she didn't believe that these were actually dark, malevolent shadow figures, but more the folks, the family members and relatives who had come back. And because our eyes are not able to necessarily comprehend this, that's how she was seeing them, were shadow figures. I don't think they're all that way, but we may just not really be able to comprehend what we're seeing.
Well, you know what I think of when you, the damn fat, the shadow figures, you think of those little bastards from Ghost, you know,
yes.
I don't want them coming after
yes.
me. You know,
mm-hmm.
so and also, what kind of jerk you got to be to die and turn into a shadow? That wouldn't be fun. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe now, I my grandmother passed away. I will never forget. We were all in the room, and she had her young brother Vincent. He died from a drunk driver hit him when he was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. So, but anyways, whenever she was passing away, she looked up and saw in the corner rooms, like, there's Vincent. And we were just all like, what? You know, and it was just one of the craziest things. But that's interesting, you know. I thank goodness I've never seen a shadow figure, though. I don't, I think that would be super creepy.
I would have never thought of it with the explanation that I just gave, if it hadn't have been for her talking about that, which makes sense to me being an artist. You know, she says it's just so much color and so bright. And if you have all that color, it turns black. So maybe that's why. Again, I don't think that's always the case in every case, but you know, I know what we were seeing, or what myself was seeing, was a shadow of a shadow figure being cast on the ground. So I thought that had to be pretty damn powerful to be something that was able to cast its own shadow onto the ground.
Now, let me ask you this, because, you know, I'm a science geek. I love physics. And, you know, do you think that there's maybe a possibility that the paranormal is actually just sometimes, you know, flaws in other dimensions, to where, you know, like there's the string theory dimension, you know, with string theory, where there's 11 different types of dimensions out there, and to where sometimes we kind of, you know, intertwine, and then that's what causes the paranormal.
I mean, I think anything is possible. And, you know, the more that I learn, the more that I see that a lot of these things seem to interrelate, everything from, I've never been one to really study UFOs or Bigfoot, but I've had several of those folks that study those on my show. And I'm starting to see that a lot of that stuff really does intertwine and interconnect. So I was talking to a guy who was talking about an interdimensional theory, and maybe almost like a kind of a time slip, which I found very interesting. And at this point, after some of the stuff I've seen, I feel like anything is possible, for sure.
And now I will say this. Okay. Now, I believe in UFOs, because I don't know if you've mm-hmm. seen any of what's going on right now, but it's
yes.
pretty insane. I used not to believe that we're being visited or any of these things, but now there's a strong possibility that, yes, that's happening. Paranormal, I totally believe in paranormal, but this is where I got to draw the line. Bigfoot. I can't get down with Sasquatch. I don't know. I just feel like, you know, I see deer, I see foxes, I see every animal you could imagine, because we've done ran up into their crib, except Bigfoot. You know, I want to see Bigfoot, you know, running around in my neighbor's backyard or something, if he's real. I don't know now, like Antoinette believes in everything. My wife, she believes, you know, she doesn't believe me when I say I put the toilet seat down, but she's got no problem believing in a hairy skunk ape. And also, did you know this? Okay. I don't know if you know this, but it's going to be TMI time on Bigfoot. In Helen, Georgia, there's a museum and they have a Bigfoot turd in a glass case.
Really?
Yes. Now, if you believe in Bigfoot, that's some extraordinary evidence. But if you're like me, somebody's got the best party story of all time. You know?
No so, doubt.
But anyways, I'm not saying like there's one guy I have on here, Ryan Stacy. He's really big in the paranormal, really huge in the UFO field. And he kind of thinks everything's kind of connected somehow. So I don't know. I don't know if I get on board with that or not, but it is interesting to think about. I don't know.
I've heard some people give some good arguments to that. I'm actually going to be speaking in July at a Bigfoot conference in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I'm actually going to be speaking on the paranormal side of things because I never have gone Sasquatching or been Bigfoot hunting. I've had a few people on my show, my weekly podcast, that's talked about Bigfoot, and I've found it interesting. I'm like you, it's a little bit harder to convince me just because, you know, I don't know, there's so much, you know, I do, the more I get out in the woods, cause I love being out in nature. And I know that there's definitely some areas in the backcountry and stuff that we don't get out to very much, but I just, it's hard for me, that we have never, that we don't have any type of solid evidence. And maybe I'm not the one to give an example of what solid evidence is, but.
Well, maybe you are, because you deal with a lot of evidence and stuff like this, and you see a lot of stuff on video, you know. So, I mean, that's my point, is I've seen things with ghosts that I'm like, mm-hmm. I can't explain it. Yeah. I've never seen a video of Bigfoot and been like, and there's no way that's a guy in a suit. There's just no way. You know, yeah. I've never been convinced. Well, let me do this because these kind of conversation, Renekin, I mean, it goes by so quick. I love these kind of conversations. But I got to ask you a couple things first. Okay. Here on the Abracadam podcast, we ask every guest to tell us a hell gig story. Now, has there ever been a place where you were giving a speech at an event or doing an investigation where something crazy, something silly, something awful, something happened? Do you got a story for us?
Let's see. You know, probably it's kind of funny. I had actually, a friend of mine had just got me a body camera. And so I was so excited about having this because being a solo investigator, I mean, I'm always looking for ways that I can make myself more efficient and capture video doing it as a one person, sometimes two person gig. And so I was doing a collaboration with Soul Sisters Paranormal down at the St. Augustine Lighthouse. And, you know, that lighthouse is amazing in and of itself. And when you investigate it, you kind of have to investigate different because you are investigating up versus investigating anywhere else. And so I had attached my brand spanking new body camera to my shirt, and I had climbed almost to the very top of the lighthouse. And I just happened to look over, and as I looked over, that body camera fell off my shirt. And then you just hear it just doot, 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 boom. And now those are, it was a police body camera, and you know, those are meant to withstand bullets and such, but they are definitely not made to withstand the fall from the St. Augustine Lighthouse. And so I got no footage from it. And, you know, those are not cheap. And again, it was a gift from a friend. So that kind of set the investigation off on sort of a bad tone, you know, but.
Son of a bitch.
Yes. And you hear me like, oh no. Well, so yeah.
Okay. That would suck. That would totally suck. Now, really, really quick, what was, well, I mean, you know, not like she just goes on and rambles, but What was probably the most haunted place that you've ever been to that you thought this place is seriously a freaking, this is like the pits of hell? What was the most haunted place?
There have been several. One that I would have to definitely call out would be a residential case that I did known as the Sunset Hill House. And I covered this one on my season 1 and season 2, and we were actually able to cover it from the beginning. I was there actually investigating a haunted relic, which was a haunted tub. And a haunted bathtub.
Haunted bathtub.
Yes. And, you know, for my show, I like to cover a lot of local legends. And so the legend on this was out of Charleston, Tennessee, and it was about a monk who had perished in a train wreck. The doctor had taken his body back to his house, and he had dissolved the skin from the bones and used the skeleton in his doctor's office.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so what was interesting about this is I investigated where the train wreck had occurred in Charleston, Tennessee. But I was also able to investigate the alleged bathtub. This family in particular had purchased this tub from that doctor's family in an estate sale, and they had it stored in this abandoned home. And so I was able to go to this home, investigate this tub. And while I was there, the activity was off the chain. We were trying to film the intro, and it was just myself and another guy there. And every time we would try to film the intro, something would happen upstairs. And so I took a little bit of equipment upstairs and to see if we could capture anything while we were working downstairs with this tub, and ended up making a phone call to the homeowner, finding out some very interesting and intriguing things that had happened in the home itself. Did a small investigation, and it ended up turning into a full-scale year-long case study, which ended up ending with calling in a demonologist, and he actually let me film the home liberation of this house, which was essentially a home exorcism.
And so
throughout this year-long case study, we found that there were 5 spirits that inhabited this home. One we believe could have potentially been connected to the monk. The others were connected through the activity that the family had experienced. And so this particular demonologist, and I wouldn't have called one in except for the fact we did several lives there, because after the season ended, people were asking what was happening, what was going on. And so we decided to come on, do like a 15-minute live, set up cameras, ask questions of what they wanted to know. And it ended up being about an hour and a half long live, just probably the most active live I've ever had. And things were happening in the middle while this was going on. And so the homeowner, who was an elderly woman, after we had gone through this year-long case study, she decided that she was going to fix the house up and later rent it out to some people. But she wanted to have it cleansed of the activity. And that's not something that I do. I mean, I'm the person you call in to try to debunk and try to tell you if there's some type of activity. And so I had met this demonologist, and I turned the case over to him. He reviewed it, and he believed that there was definitely something in there that he could help. He came out of South Georgia, brought a partner out of Central Florida, and he was gracious enough to let us film it. Most home exorcisms and stuff, they don't allow to film. And so we were able to put this together in a way to where we didn't show everything, all the secrets and everything that's happening, but was able to show some of the stuff. And actually this demonologist never really had paranormal equipment sitting out while he was doing his home liberation. And so we were able to capture some crazy, crazy things when he was going through his process. And this ended up being a 10-hour process. Wow. And ended up being the season finale of season 2. So that would definitely have to be the most active location that I've ever been to.
Definitely. We have to check that out then.
Yes.
Definitely. Okay. I tell you what, well, here on the Abracadam podcast, we do some ridiculous magic tricks. We do some fun stuff. I was just thinking about this. Do you like coin tricks?
Do you
like coin magic? I tell you what, I'm gonna do a cool coin trick for you, okay?
Awesome.
You can see it. Now, here's the cool thing though, because like I love, like, if you hold the coin like up to the camera,
uh-huh,
it looks huge. Just the thing I love about it. It looks really big.
But and that's because it is. It's like huge. It's a big coin. It's stupid. I don't know. Having some fun. Wait a minute. Wait. That got weird. Hold on. Did you hear that? I think we've got a ghost. I think it's either a ghost or a floating joint. One of the two. I don't know which one. Let's see if we get high here. Here we go. Okay. Yeah, I'm a little stoned. All right.
I love it.
I tell you, here's a good one, though. I will show you a really good one. A really good one before we get out of here. Do you believe in mind reading, Miranda?
Of course.
Awesome. All right, we're going to try some mind reading here. Let's see. We got some cards. Let's go with these right here. Here we go. All right, Miranda. I'm going to hold the cards up to the camera. You got them? And I just want you to think of one of those cards. Just think of one.
Okay.
You got it inside your head.
I do.
All right. Don't tell me. Keep it inside there. I'm going to try to get inside your mind and redecorate. All right. Here we go. I'm going to lose the cards. I'm going to shuffle them. Hey, see if we can do this. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to hold the deck of cards right up here. I'm going to try to cut to your car. Okay. Going to give it a shot. Miranda. I'm going to go right here. I'm obligated. I am totally obligated. I can't get out of this. There's nothing I can do. Miranda, what is the card you were thinking of?
Three of diamonds.
The three of diamonds. Now, Miranda, if I get this right, if this happens, you got to make a lot of noise. You got to give me your best EVP impression. Are you ready? You said the three of diamonds.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Abracadam podcast, I got the three of diamonds.
What? Nice.
Yes. You've been Abracadam.
Yes. Wow.
Here we go. And I tell you what, at no time do I cheat because these are my real hands, except for this one. But other than that, these are the real hands, the sleight of hands. I tell you what, Miranda, before we get out of here, can you let the listeners know where can they learn about Ghost Biker Explorations? Where can they watch the show? Let us know everything.
Absolutely. So you can watch the past three seasons and the upcoming season four on the Ghost Biker Explorations Facebook page, Ghost Biker Explorations YouTube channel, and www.ghostbikerexplorations.com. I'm very active on Facebook with lives and different events and stuff that are coming up. You can also see my photography on Instagram under Runaway Vixen. And you can also follow me every week on the podcast that I have known as Shop Talk Live on the Ghost Biker Garage. And that's every night at night, or it's a Facebook Live every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And it goes for an hour. And then it airs again on mix1041.com on Saturdays.
Super cool. And now, are you going to be at any, got any upcoming events? You going to be anywhere, like anywhere close or just?
I do. I'm actually going to be on the first one on July 10th up in Oneida, Tennessee at the, it's the Veterans Celebration and History in the Streets with the Black Cat. I'm going to be one of the special guests there on July 10th. I'm going to be in Ann Arbor, Michigan on July 17th at the Bigfoot Conference, speaking about the paranormal. And we've just got a full schedule. I do a lot of events at Harley Davidson's around the country. And so these are free events. We just had Screamfest this past weekend. So all of these events, except for, I think, like the Bigfoot Festival convention, that one does have a charge, but I've got all of those listed on my website and also on the Facebook page as well.
You know, I love those kind of, you know, I perform, like I've done stuff there with Mo in the American at Zombie Fest, which is a great festival.
Yes, it is.
Also, I'm going to be at CreepyCon, which I do my Halloween, my comedy Halloween magic show.
So it's kind of a interesting thing. But yeah, I was wondering if you were, have you ever been to CreepyCon or?
I've not. And I'm actually going to look into setting up a booth there at CreepyCon this year.
I think that would be great getting you out there. It would be fantastic.
Yeah, I've done, and actually I'm doing Moe's Zombie Fest this year as well, and the Chili Cook-Off. So I've got the Chili Cook-Off there in Oneida, as well as the Veterans Day Appreciation, and then Zombie Fest. And so I would love to get to Knoxville, and I believe it's in Knoxville, right, CreepyCon?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to get to that and come out and see everyone. We get bikers that come from all over, bikers, historians, and paranormal investigators that come by. So yeah, I definitely love to check that out.
That is super cool. Well, I tell you what, this has been fun. This has been very interesting, and I can't wait to watch some of these episodes. I really want to see them. Once again, thank you so much, Miranda Young, for coming on the Abracadam podcast. This has been a blast.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, that does it for that episode of the Abracadam Podcast. Guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Miranda Young from Ghost Bikers Explorations. Very cool stuff, man, especially if you're into the ghosts. Definitely check out her YouTube channel, Ghost Bikers Explorations. It's really good. It is really good. I really enjoy them. It's now one of my favorite paranormal shows to watch. And also, I do want to give a quick apology. The dates she listed in July, those dates have passed. I do apologize. But I know you'll be able to see her at other places. So definitely go to her website and check out her scheduled events. She's fantastic to talk to, especially if you're into the paranormal. Also, guys, be sure to check out the YouTube channel. Okay, you can see 30 minutes of this episode on YouTube, and it's also full of some funny memes, some funny little edits, some stuff that may make you crack a smile a little bit too. So definitely be sure to check out the Abracadam podcast on YouTube as well, and subscribe and hit that follow button and like button. All right, Abracadamits. Like always, thank you for listening.
It's awesome. Please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party!